I was thinking yesterday or the day before about the denial of reality. And last night I was reading on Aish a rabbi named Ari Kahn. The title of his piece was Living the Dream, Ignoring Reality. Thought that was kind of fun. So, Korah. First off, who are all these people? That helps to know that. Korah is Moses' cousin. He lives in the southern camp. Dathan and Abiram are Reubenites. They also live in the southern camp. The 250 were probably firstborn that he brought up. So what you have is Korah, who is grumpy because Aaron is the high priest and not him. Then you have the Reubenites, who are the firstborn of Jacob, and they've sort of been passed over for everything. They're all in that southern camp. And you'll notice, by the way, that when the ground opens up and swallows these folks, it takes out Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So they live right together. It's that southern camp, and that's where all this foment is happening. When the Levites got chosen to be the priesthood, all of the firstborn in the rest of the tribes got cut out. So the way things would normally have worked is in each tribe, firstborn would have been the ones that connected and so forth, the local priests. So these are all people who have been bypassed by God. Korah is clearly a talented guy because he is able to raise a rebellion against Moses. And he's got a slogan. All the congregation are holy, every one of them. So what he's done is he's got himself a slogan, you know, live free or die or whatever. We got a slogan, we got a talented leader, and we've got discontent. Because the other thing that's going on, of course, is we have just finished up with the sin of the spies. And we're not going into the land. Now, let's stop and think a second. What they're nostalgic for, of course, is Egypt, where they were slaves. But compared to what's going on now, slavery looks pretty good to them. The other thing that's going on is they've only got Moses' word for all this because God speaks through Moses. Now, Moses is clearly a very, very powerful prophet. So Moses is clearly connected. There's no question about that. But all of this stuff that has happened has come through his mouth. It hasn't come directly from God, except the Ten Commandments, or actually the first two of the Ten Commandments. Ever since Moses has shown up on the scene, it has been one disappointment after another. So he goes to Egypt, and he says, we're taking you out. Next thing we have is bricks without straw. Takes them into the wilderness. We ran out of water. Takes them further into the wilderness. We ran out of food. Takes them further into the wilderness. The Amalekites attack us. And finally, we get to going into the land, and we bounce. And all of this is Moses' fault. Or at least that's what Korah is able to convince people. Because, as I say, Moses is the connection to God. So everything they know about what has happened has come from the lips of Moses. So Moses said, we're not going into the land. It's going to be 40 years. Well, God told Moses that, but did he really? Again, you understand what the dynamic is in that southern camp where everybody is grumpy. Things aren't going the way they want them to go. They've just tried to go up in the land and they've been run out of there. Nothing is going right. And there's Moses. He's the one that is the focus of all of this. So that is the situation that allows Korah to foment a rebellion. And it's interesting, at the end of the affair, when the ground opens up and so forth, the people say, in Numbers 16, the next day after the ground is opened up and so forth, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, you have killed the people of the Lord. So again, the focus is on Moses and Aaron, but mostly Moses. And there's no question in anybody's mind that he is a powerful prophet. He can get things to happen. But the question is, whose idea is all this stuff? Is all of this stuff God's idea, or is Moses sort of rolling his own? And he snaked us out into the wilderness, and we're all going to die, and it's all his fault. I'm trying to set up the dynamic for you that's going on in their mind. So the fantasy then is, if we get a different leader, maybe he can turn things around. Maybe he can make things better. This is terrible. We were better off in Egypt. So maybe if we get another leader, maybe we can do it. So that's the dynamic of what's going on with Korah and all the people around him that are grumpy and discontented and so forth. And we've got the slogan, hey, we're all holy, not just those two. Now, human nature, people don't care about facts very much. They just want what they want. And the problem with God, to most people, is God represents reality. And God's reality is God's reality, and it doesn't matter what you think about it. Reality is reality. People don't like that. Korah didn't like that. The Reubenites didn't like that. And the way humans are is we can't change reality. So what we do is we attack the people who represent reality. It's all your fault. And that's what's happening with Moses. The reality, of course, is God has brought that nation out. God has set up everything. God has moved this, and Moses is simply his prophet. In fact, on many occasions, Moses stands between God and the people when God has finally had it up to here with them. But they don't know that. All they recognize is the reality of their lousy situation, and the one who represents that reality is Moses. And so what happens is, we can't do anything about God, but boy, we can do something about you. So that's what they're trying to do. And that is entirely human. And by the way, that's what's going on today in our society. People are born male and female. That's the reality. We don't like that reality. Or some people don't like it. I like it just fine. But lots of people don't like that reality. And so who do they attack? The people who say that stuff is not real. You can pretend to be anything you want, but you're still a guy and you're still a girl. Doesn't matter what you pretend. Well, you're a Nazi. In other words, everybody who disagrees with me and my little fantasy is a Nazi. That's exactly what's going on in Korah's rebellion. We are grumpy about where we are. You're the focal point, so we're coming after you. And that's what's happening in our society. These people are deeply unhappy. I mean, you got to be deeply unhappy to get yourself surgerized and try to become something you're not. And something, by the way, that you know in your heart never can be. You've got to be deeply, deeply unhappy to do something like that. So what they do is they attack those who say, no, it doesn't work. You're still what you are. You're still what God made you. And the problem then is we can't do anything about God, but we can do something about you. We can yell at you, we can cancel, and so forth. So let's talk about argument, conflict. We are all independent, free agents. God designed us that way. So what's going to happen is I have a different perspective than you have. We're going to argue about it. That's inherent in who we are and what we are. People argue with each other. That's what we do in Midrash. We argue with each other. Now, there's two kinds of arguments. The rabbis have said this, and I like it very much. There's arguments for the sake of heaven, and there's arguments for the sake of power. Arguments for the sake of heaven is what I hope we do in Midrash, where I see something one way, and Mike, for example, sees something a different way, and we argue about it. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to sort out the truth of something important. You all have a different perspective than I do, and so you all read these things and you see different things, and so when we talk about it and argue about it and so forth, that's an argument for the sake of heaven, because what we're trying to do is figure out what the truth is. And one hopes that nobody gets crosswise, so they go off in a huff and we never do lunch again. That can happen, but I pray that it doesn't, because what we're trying to do is figure out what God has to say. And lots of times I have changed my mind based on some argument that one of you has made. It happens to me all the time. That's healthy. That's normal. In fact, there's a proverb that says, iron sharpens iron. Being sharpened is not a pleasant process, because what happens is pieces of you get scraped off. That's the essence of being sharpened. It is not a pleasant process for the knife. So the fact that iron sharpens iron is talking about arguments for the sake of heaven. Now, the other one is arguments for the sake of power. That's a different kind of an argument. And what we have in today's Torah portion are arguments for the sake of power. And notice how the argument proceeds. In Numbers 16:3, they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" In other words, you guys are not good people. You have raised yourself up above us. Go down to Numbers 16:12, where we're talking about Dathan and Abiram. And Moses called to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us out of a land flowing with milk and honey, Egypt, to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us?" In other words, your motivation is not good. What you really want is power over us, and you're using your connection as a prophet to God to get power. That's what you're doing. So notice that the argument there is a personal attack. And that's the difference between an argument for the sake of power and the argument for the sake of heaven. Arguments for the sake of heaven, we're wrestling with a concept, trying to figure it out. But I would certainly never say, "What do you got, cornflakes for brains?" I wouldn't argue that way, because that's a personal attack. That's the thing that's going on here with Korah, is it's all based on personal attacks. Moses, you are nefarious. You are a dictator. You are trying to gain power for yourself. And notice one of the things that Moses says when he opens up the earth is, "I have not taken a donkey from any of these people." And we read the same thing in Samuel, who was channeling Moses when he's turned over the judgeship to the king. He's saying, "I have not profited. All you out there, have I defrauded any of you? Come stand now. Tell me." And they all say, "No, you have not defrauded us." So the essence of the argument with Korah and all the rest of them is, you are doing this for personal power and aggrandizement. We don't doubt you got the connection to God, but you're misusing it. And oh, by the way, the thing that someone accuses you of in an argument for power is pretty much always the thing that that person wants. So accusing Moses of being a dictator gives you a window into the heart of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. They want to be in charge. That's what their motivation is. So as you're involved in an argument for the sake of power, recognize the technique. First part of the technique is accusation. But the accusation then opens up a window, and you can see what the problem is on the other side very often. Notice one other thing. Force does not settle the question. Moses is a Levite. Levites got a temper. Moses has been better than most Levites in keeping his temper under control. But he does have a boiling point. So when he finally goes and says, "God, if I'm your man, something new is going to happen here. The earth is going to split," and there they go. And the earth goes, "Bloop, bloop," and they're gone. So what he has done is he has wiped out all the leaders of the opposition. God toasted the 250 on the spot. Moses, with the ground opening, got rid of the rest of them. So all of the leadership of this rebellion is gone. The problem has not gone away. Because the next day, all of the people of Israel assemble before the tent and says, "You're killing the people." Notice who is killing the people. Moses, "You're killing the people. You're killing us." So the argument is not settled by force. It is simply driven underground. So when you have an argument for the sake of power, power doesn't settle it often. Now, it may result in warfare and murder and all sorts of things. That certainly happens. And interestingly enough, reason doesn't typically settle it either. Because using our example that I used earlier, if you go to somebody who has got a 3-day beard and is dressed up like a girl and say, "You got a 3-day beard, you're dressed like a girl, but you're not, you're a guy." Reason isn't going to change the mind either, because these people are living in a fantasy. And what they're protecting is their fantasy. And they will use violence to protect their fantasy, just as Korah was willing to use violence to protect his fantasy. And his fantasy was, we're all the same here. We're all holy. We're all God's people. There's nothing special about you guys. Why did you pick Aaron to be the high priest? Because he's your brother. Nepotism. That's what's going on in their minds. And as I say, force doesn't settle it. And it's interesting what does settle it. We have the business with the rods. Now, I will tell you, if I were the leader of the tribe of Dan, and after all of this, I got told to bring my staff up, I would say, "I'll give it to somebody and you carry it up. I'm not getting anywhere near that." But anyway, they all bring their staffs up. And what God does is he settles it by bringing forth life. You've got these dead sticks. He puts the sticks in front of the ark, and the next morning, Aaron's dead stick is not only blossoming, it's bringing forth ripe almonds. This is very gentle. Nobody died in this process. Again, I could see, if I were part of the rebellion, Moses is a Levite. We all know what Levites are like. Given any propagation whatsoever, they'll go out and slaughter a small town. So the fact that Moses is a Levite and there is so much death and destruction as a result of this, I could see how people would think, this isn't God doing this, this is Moses. Moses just finally had it up to here, and yeah, he's got the power, but he's misusing it. But now we have a very gentle demonstration of the bringing forth of life. And that settles everything down. But that's what it takes. It takes an overwhelming display of reality. Because remember, the problem is they're living in a fantasy. They're thinking, we can do this better than Moses and Aaron can, or at least as well. So they're living in a fantasy, and what God has done is he has stripped the fantasy away, but he has done it very gently. He hasn't slaughtered anybody in that process. Now, we do have a bunch of people get slaughtered, and we'll talk about that in Midrash, because that's very interesting too, because that goes to Revelation, and we'll talk about that in Midrash. So I started off by saying an argument for the sake of heaven is an argument to settle something important. Important. One of the rabbis on Aish that I was reading closes his piece with a question. Would you rather be right or have peace? But that's the point of something important. An argument for the sake of heaven is to settle something important. There are all sorts of things that are not important that we can find other people in error about. And in that case, if you insist on being right, what you wind up with is not an argument for the sake of heaven, but strife in the community. So as you're arguing for the sake of heaven, which I hope we all do during Midrash, that's a good thing about Midrash, recognize that we're talking about important things. When you're doing lunch or something like that and see somebody eating with the wrong fork, that's not an argument for the sake of heaven. And in that case, the question you have to ask is, would you rather be right or would you rather have a peaceful lunch?